the Sirius Universe. Season 31, episode 19. Coming up on the show, we've got the temporal doors of ascension, the hot tub teleportation machine, and the Hyperborean mole army readies its troops. I'm your host, Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
Does this somehow link into the end of the Kali Yugas? And is it kind of like, we're in trouble?
Yes, it does.
Indeed, it does. You might remember from the interview with Bibu Dev Misra last week, of course, we were talking about the Yugas, the Kali Yuga. He mentioned very briefly in that interview the Kala Chakra Tantra prophecy, which is this very esoteric initiation kind of path within Tibetan Buddhism, and it's attached to prophecy. And it's attached to that prophecy of the king of the world returning from Shambhala at a certain point in time with the denizens of his world to fight the wickedness in the world. And Bibu mentioned that briefly because the descriptions of the timeline of that Tibetan prophecy matched up very precisely with his predictions for the end of the Kali Yuga. You see, you may remember Bibu said the end of the Kali Yuga was March next year. And the final king of this Tibetan prophecy, who would ascend the throne and basically take over from the old king in this mythical realm of Shambhala, he would be coronated in 2025. And so it all lines up. And this king, his name's Rudra Chakran, which means the wrathful one with the wheel. And he's meant to come forth with his mole army and destroy all the wickedness in the world.
Where does the mole army come in? Like, are you talking mole people or like actual moles that just overrun everything?
Well, that's really just the meme we created because it's people living underground. So we just called them the mole people.
Yeah.
But this is something we've spoken about many times on the show. We've covered the various versions of this mythology, whether it came from French occult sources or whether it came from the Theosophists. And we've spoken about the overlaps, how no matter which source you go to, even though they have differing chronologies and different understandings of how this prophecy plays out,
the core details of it appear to be the same. It's like that flood myth, how the flood myth seems to appear amongst, you know, many different cultures, but the crux of it is always very similar.
It's really fascinating how much of it crosses over. And of course, after interviewing Bibu last week and his mention of it, I realized I had to go back to it. I wanted to do a follow-on from Bibu and look at this kind of final time period that we're supposedly in and talk about more of what's prophesied to come. Now, just by happenstance, I went to one of my favorite writers over at Substack, which of course is Popehead.
Oh, yes, of course.
And I haven't set up my screen capture.
Where is
he? I haven't set up my screen capture. I'm an idiot. Let me just quickly set that up and I'll show you what I mean. So here it is here. And take a look at popehead.substack.com. Really brilliant writer.
Between Xanadu and Shambhala.
He just happens to have this fascinating, it's currently in three parts, exclusive to his subscribers, but I'm going to do this in the Plus extension coming up and reveal some of his research and what he's been going into. But he takes a different angle at this and looks at the geography of the idea of the pole.
The pole, as in like the North and South Poles?
Yes, in a way. There's like a geographical idea of the pole, but there's also the idea of the spiritual pole.
Oh.
There's like a center of the, I guess, the spiritual core of our current humankind, and it being the driving force. Everything kind of revolves around this idea of the spiritual core.
And what, are we going to have some type of pole shift or reversal?
It's funny you say that, because what Popehead does is go into some of the very early legends and myths surrounding Hyperborea.
What was Hyperborea?
Hyperborea is the idea of the north.
Okay. Okay.
It means the mystical north. And it's the idea that this spiritual pole was also at the geographical pole in essentially in the North Pole. And this was adopted in latter years by the Nazis in particular, pushed this Hyperborean idea. But what Popehead does is look at some of these ancient sources in the same way that Bibu did, and he ties this in to some of the mystical visionaries that came to the same conclusion, and the idea that some kind of cataclysm in between the shift of these ages, you know, like 3,000 years ago, moved that spiritual and geographical pole to somewhere else on the planet. And so that's what we'll be going into in the Plus extension, the question of where did it move to and how did it develop over time? And what does that mean for this end of the Kali Yuga period?
Well, I'm beginning to wonder if this ties in with what I'm going to go into on this show. And that's this whole concept that we kind of touched on the last show where you were describing the story of, and I can't recall his name, I'm sorry, but there was a young gentleman who claims that he developed a time machine, essentially, and he called up Coast to Coast. I'll link to it in the show notes so you can check it out. But he claims that he was able to send himself back or forward in time by utilizing this time machine.
Oh, don't make me bring up the last show's notes.
No, don't worry about that.
I usually throw them and light them on fire at the end of every show.
It's not important, right? But where it kind of sits is that it just so happens that there is a collection of reports that seem to indicate that there are locations all around the world where naturally people can travel through time, or not just through time, but actual parallel dimensions as well. And that was something that we were going into, is that this guy had somehow flung himself not into another time zone, but an actual another dimension. And we kind of touched on the idea that, well, perhaps this could explain a lot of the missing 411 phenomenon that takes place. Well, I'm going to dig far deeper into that because I think there's something to that. I think a lot of the missing 411 elements, such as storms that occur, locations that are previously searched. And if you're not familiar with missing 411, I mean, if you're listening to this, you probably should be. But if you're not, missing 411 is where people mysteriously disappear under strange circumstances in, for the most part, national parks. And a lot of the time, the person will be sought after and there'll be searches that are conducted by multitudes of people. They never find anyone. And then all of a sudden, the person will return. And sometimes, unfortunately, a lot of the times, it's a body, which is just found. But other times, it's where the person has come back and recalls being somewhere else, but they don't have any details about it. Well, it might fit with this collection of reports that suggests that there is some natural phenomenon that's occurring here on Earth that causes people to be dragged into other dimensions, other time zones, other places that are just not in our reality. But for some reason, it's like there's this natural mechanism that we obviously don't understand because we don't even understand the mechanism of how it's occurring in the first place, but causes whatever matter to return to the place where it's supposed to be. And that's why the person, like missing 411 cases, they might fall into some temporal rift or some other dimension, and searches will go through and be days and days and days, and then all of a sudden the body will be back.
I like how in the intro, you know, you're talking about these ancient geographical zones of strangeness, but you mentioned a hot tub teleportation machine. Not a time machine.
No.
No, because that would be too mainstream.
That's of course
it's a teleportation machine.
Well, obviously, I'm, you know, kind of just taking that and running with it. But yeah, this relates to teleportation because one of the biggest factors... Oh, here we go. Here
Mike Markham, Mike Markham, the guy you were thinking of.
Yeah,
who
right.
built his own time machine and then threw cats into it and it would teleport them through time. And then he threw himself into it and then disappeared for 2 years.
And then he finally disappeared. And then someone found a newspaper report from, what was it, decades ago of how, because some weird drum showed up in a river somewhere.
Yeah,
and
he teleported,
his body was inside.
He teleported himself back to 1932 with his iPhone in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
That's right. He was carrying some strange device. And look, I was thinking about that because if this happens, if this actually does happen, it's some phenomenon which is occurring, you would think that we would have more of these reports, but it seems like we don't. Like, it doesn't really show up. And a lot of this stuff, the cases that do show up, are kind of relegated to, like, News of the World and, you know, these sort of, you know, sensationalized magazines that put this kind of stuff out. But I think in some of these stories, there's a little bit of truth. Now, one story where I'm not necessarily believing that there's any truth in it whatsoever is this story that has just come out of Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this is from a TikToker. His name is Alex Shaw. He's a real estate agent. I'll link to the actual video in the show notes so you can watch it for yourself. I'm not going to play it here because when you look at it, your reaction is probably going to be the same as mine. It's some guy in makeup, right? But where I get it, I can listen to this. So a Florida real estate agent by the name of Alex Shaw has posted home doorbell camera videos of a man in his yard at his Airbnb. So this Airbnb apparently is located 5 hours away, and this camera footage shows this man walking around, seemingly casing the joint, before he disappears into his shed, right? Now, when he went, Shaw apparently called the police and said, look, there's some guy, I've just gotten doorbell footage, maybe it's a Ring doorbell, I don't know exactly what it is, but he called the police. He yelled at the guy through the speaker, so you know with Ring doorbells, you can have two-way communication. He yelled at the guy through the speaker, and he continued to monitor the situation as the police arrived. Now, the police arrived and searched the shed. They found it completely empty, but the camera showed no one leaving, and there was no other way out, apparently. According to this guy, there was no other way out. So, because it's a motion-sensitive camera, it's not recording all the time, maybe he could have snuck out some other way, but it seems like the camera should have been good enough to be able to pick up anyone leaving. Now, he claims, and this is where it fits into these other sorts of stories, is that a few days later, the camera detected a man walking out of the same shed. This man was much older, had different clothes, but his glasses were the same, and there was an uncanny resemblance, causing Shaw to believe that the shed might be some kind of time machine. Now, I'm like, come on.
You know, there's a trend of these completely retarded time travel videos on TikTok.
Is. Yeah.
There's all these articles about it. If you do a quick search, you'll find all these, you know, mainstream news articles about what's the deal with this time travel trend on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's because the average age and intelligence of the TikTok user is, what, 13 years old and a very low IQ.
Absolutely. So if you look at this straight away when you look at it, you know that, yeah, a young and impressionable person probably would think that there's something to this. To me, it's quite apparent that this is either makeup or some type of trickery that's been done with the camera.
I hope you're just getting the ridiculous stories out of the way before you jump into the fully schizo ones that are totally true.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, right? And this is the problem because many of these stories that I'm going to have for you, I mean, they go back well into the past. I'm not talking like 2000 as this hot tub teleport machine, which I'm going to go back to, but I'm talking these sorts of phenomena, right? As crazy as it sounds, has been happening for a long time. Yeah, TikTokers are probably running with these stupid things today, but these particular zones where weird activity takes place has been around for a long time. So one great example comes from Paul Stonehill. And as I said in the last show, Ben, you're referencing some of his weird reports. Well, Paul Stonehill, you know, I really like how he pulls out these cases from Russian-speaking reports and translates them. So they seem to be a little bit more obscure, unless, of course, you speak Russian. But in one of these particular stories, and I'll link to this as well so you can watch the entire video where he has these examples, but he describes this story of a young woman who had gone hiking with her father. And apparently it was just a regular thing that they would do and they would go for this walk. I don't know the exact time frame, but I believe we're talking the 1970s where this particular event took place. Now they went for a walk and they walked past this factory. And this factory was very run down and, you know, very just obviously there's something not right about it. Like it's been abandoned, but there was an eerie feeling to it. Something which is reported a lot in these experiences where people say they go for a hike or they go to a particular location that's associated with this phenomena. And there's a feeling to it. So they go for a walk and the father says something like, oh, I want to go and check it out. So he wanders inside and then the story flips to what the father's describing, where the father wanders inside this factory. He looks around. There's kind of this weird time slip element where things look like it's actually much newer on the inside, still abandoned, but much newer and like not as run down. The weather is different, something which is consistent with missing 411 cases. And he wanders around and comes outside. Now, when he comes outside, he finds his daughter crying. Like, his daughter is, like, sitting on this rock not too far down the path. And like, he went in to have a pee, right? So, he's only gone for a few moments, if that. And when he comes out, he said to his daughter, what's wrong? And she's like, oh, father! And she comes up and hugs him. And, you know, she's really upset. He's been missing for 5 days. Something like that. Like,
what has she been sitting out there for
so
5 days?
Well, what she's done, right, is that this is the crazy thing about this. This particular
comes
location.
Back every day or something.
She come because she was waiting for her father when we switched back to her perspective. She was waiting for her father and he didn't show up and it was 10 minutes, it was half an hour. And apparently some villagers came along. And to the villagers, because it's so such a common occurrence, they were like, oh, are you missing someone? She's like, yeah, my father went in there to have a slash and he's disappeared. He hasn't come back. And their response was like, oh, yeah, people disappear all the time. He could be a few days. Like, it was just readily accepted.
He's just having a time slash.
A time slash. Yes, exactly. But it was just readily accepted by the people in this village that this was a particular location where these events, there's a distortion that took place. So there's nothing special about it, right? And many of the cases or places I'm going to tell you in a moment, they seem to have something special about it. And this ties back into more folkloric and traditional kind of ideas as to what is happening in these locations and why these locations by older cultures may actually be revered. But as we've moved into this more modern world that we live in and we don't have an understanding or an acceptance of these sorts of ideas, you build, you know, a factory on top of some weird ancient energy portal. And yeah, when people go in there, they get caught in some type of time rift. So going back to Florida, right, back to 2000, it's only a very, very small report, right? But there's a report from November of 2000 where a man by the name of Ralph Morley claimed that he and his wife were relaxing at their Miami home, right? So they're in their home. And they had a hot tub in their backyard.
Oh, God.
Now, one of them wanders out to find that there's a strange, confused, and upset man in their hot tub.
What?
This is this weird
guy. Some vagrant.
He's just, no, he's like a normal guy. He's wearing, you know, trunks, like swimming trunks. And he's like, where am I? What the hell's going on? What's going on? And he claims that he had just, the last thing he recalls is diving into a pool 8 miles away. And when he surfaced in the hot tub, right?
I was waiting for the whole time machine thing because, of course, you have the hot tub time machine movie from 2010.
Yeah.
But no, this is not, this is just strict teleportation.
No time travel whatsoever. This is strict teleportation. And of course, this sounds absurd. And it sounds to me like, well, this is what happens when people get caught. You know, the common thing you hear here in Australia when someone like breaks into someone's home, they go, oh, I just came in for a glass of water. I think this is exactly the same thing. Like, this guy is either drunk or on drugs and he's wandered in and he's come up with this elaborate story. But according to the report, his story was actually confirmed when the stranger's wife and his two teenage children said that they had witnessed him dive into the pool at the motel and then never resurfaced. The police were searching for him at the moment that he hadn't resurfaced, or that they called.
What's the source for this story?
Okay, so this is what is pointed out by Brett Swanser. He says, look, unfortunately, this was first reported in Weekly World News, so it should be taken with a grain of salt, but you know, it's worth mentioning these sorts of reports because a lot of these sorts of things are pushed into the tabloids and into sensationalized
media. First published at Weekly World News, picked up by a Russian blog, translated into Russian, then dug up by Paul Stonehill.
No, this wasn't Paul
and
Stonehill.
And reported to you on Mysterious Universe.
This wasn't Paul Stonehill, right? But actually, speaking of Paul Stonehill, and to, you know, I was immediately thinking of the instances of missing 411 because he does have this report of this man who was walking through Leningrad. And I've actually just got some of the reports here. So as he was walking through Leningrad, it was early in the morning. He was heading along the local river where there was something known as the Bronze Horseman statue. And it was just before sunrise, so there was still light around, but the embankment was completely deserted and cars rarely passed by. But he says, all of a sudden, everything changed. And as everything changed, something like a flash followed, and then instantaneously, everything disappeared. Like, this is his perspective of, like, just everything disappeared. But he said, then I found myself walking on a flat gray surface in front of me. Now, there before me, and obviously this is, you know, translated, but he said, there before me hung these spheres in several rows. And if there was a sphere in my way, as I walked towards it, it would just simply drift past me. But there was nothing around these spheres. Now, he actually got really distressed being in this realm, this place. He doesn't know where he was. And when his distress started kind of skyrocketing, he realized that he was suddenly walking along the embankment again. And when he came to, he said his eyes were closed and there was someone talking to him, asking him what was wrong with him. He opened his eyes and there was this elderly gentleman standing over the top of him. And was back in this normal reality. No time had taken place, but it was almost like he had, like, no time difference had taken place. But it was almost like he had passed into this
other realm, like a loading room? The loading room.
Like, what is it? Is it looking behind the code? Like, what's happening here?
Now, so all the texture, it lost all the texture and everyone was just a floating sphere.
All the polygons. You know, it's like they're just all the structure of the universe was there, right? And so Paul Stonehill points out that, look, you know, these sorts of cases appear to be some type of temporal mirage. They're mirages from the future where people, you know, they experience them, but it's still a mirage, right? They're not actually going anywhere. They're just encountering this kind of phenomenon. And, you know, we've heard stories like this before. I've heard European reports that are kind of similar to this, but he reports on a story from the shores of Lake Baikal, which in itself is already a very strange location, an extremely deep lake. You may recall Lake Baikal because of the reports of the strange, you know, humanoids, the white humanoids, like white flesh humanoids that are there. But there was an observation by a monk who had come from a Scottish monastery, and he was going to visit a monastery that was somewhere in that vicinity, and he had to travel between a valley. Now, he said when he traveled down into the valley, he insists that the surrounding illumination changed dramatically, like just suddenly and dramatically. And he said two metal strips were laid bare along the bottom of the valley before him, and heading towards him was a black fire-breathing monster that was rushing at immense speed. Now, he, the monk, took it to be a devil and fainted, obviously, with fear. And when he woke up, he was back in the same situation that he was before. Now, apparently, he refused to visit the monastery. But later on, what we found out is that he recorded it, right? He returned to his own monastery and recorded this. And we found out that 200 years later, there was a railway that was laid directly through this valley where this monk had been. So is it that he'd had a witness, he had somehow kind of had a witness of what was happening in the future of a railway line coming across? I'm not too sure, you know, what to make of that. But again, in a lot of these cases, you find that there's some type of strange weather activity that's going on. And let's get into some of these cases, actually, of where the weather seems to change in a very strange circumstance. So there's a report from a Russian by the name of Boris Zoltov, and this was reported on a forum in June of 2008. He claims that he was an army officer serving in Kazakhstan in 1967 when he experienced some very strange events when he was trying to get back to Moscow, which apparently was like some 3,000 or so miles away. And this is, you know, very roughly translated. But he said there was a train that takes about 3.5 days where he had to travel from the headquarters. And as he was traveling along, he said a lieutenant came along on a motorcycle and he was going to get to the train station, right? So the guy comes along and says, oh, would you like a lift? And he insists, he's like, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that's fine. And apparently this voice kind of came to him in his head and said, you know, don't do that. You know, don't get on that bike for whatever reason. And he says, as soon as that happened, he found himself in Moscow. It's like, he just suddenly, just like this voice comes through and he's like hours and hours and hours ahead.
Where in Moscow?
In Moscow. Like
doing what?
The particular-
Standing like, and just standing
just,
somewhere
just
else.
Comes to in the street.
Did
just,
anyone see him?
No. Well, apparently what did happen is that the travel documents he was supposed to be taking, you know, weren't with him, but he contacted his lieutenant. His lieutenant was like, you disappeared. And it's like, he had the documents. So what is happening in these cases? And of course, it was referred later on. And another report that I was reading that references this one is that there was strange weather activity that was taking place right before this happened. Now, I thought, okay, the weather activity got my attention because of what we've heard in missing 411 cases so frequently of this kind of stuff taking place. And indeed, it was actually, it was Linda Godfrey in her book, Monsters Among Us, where she didn't directly reference it being weather activity, but solar flare activity. Sunspot activity seemed to, on some circumstances, coincide with the strange appearance of dogmen and Bigfoot-type creatures that displayed invisibility traits, or had, you know, these reports of people kind of disappearing and appearing. Like, this is one great example of where a guy is driving along the side of the road, and he said he saw, and this is the Rogers family, and he said that he saw some like ambling Bigfoot-type creature that was moving along. It was quite ferocious. But he said that it kind of walked into a wall, like it just and just disappeared, just and not dematerialized. It just walked into a wall and was gone. And many of these reports of this kind of activity taking place seem to be consistent with that. It's like, it got me thinking, is it that there are some locations that for whatever reason have harnessed the Earth's energy, and then because there's some type of sunspot activity that it somehow powers them? Is that what's going on? Is that why you might have more occurrences?
Why did you say sunspot activity?
Because this is what Linda Godfrey was looking at. No, she was okay. Kind of correlate that in some of these reports, obviously not all of them, but in some of these reports, if there was strange solar activity, it was consistent with more invisibility reports.
That means last week, everyone would have been teleporting everywhere.
I know. I was actually thinking about that, right? I was thinking, I'm like, oh, is this like a height? And I saw today, and no one knows exactly because the news hasn't come out yet, but obviously by the time this show comes out, but apparently the Vatican is about to make some announcement on supernatural phenomena. So I don't know what's occurring there, but it feels like things are kind of heating up. But it got me thinking about this because, as I pointed out to you a little bit earlier, Ben, that more traditional cultures have understood this concept for a long time. And it makes kind of sense because it's like they observed their surroundings and didn't necessarily attempt to rationalize what was going on. They just accepted what they saw and what they experienced. And of course, you know, many of these cultures are now gone, so we don't know entirely what to make of them. But there are locations around the world that kind of have this. And if you look at these folkloric reports, right, and even in translations from old documents and even, you know, some surviving oral traditions, there seems to be this common theme that there were gods or there were entities that would interact with humanity, but they would do it at specific locations around the world. And at these specific locations, it was almost like you had to follow a certain practice, have a certain piety to be able to pass through these. Of course, there are plenty of random reports like I'll come back to in a moment, but there was this understanding that if you followed a certain practice like a monk or a shaman or something like that, you would be able to pass through these doorways at certain times. So let me describe some of these, and I'll bring up some of the images. Of course, ancient Egypt is, you know, obligatory when it comes to these sorts of reports. You have Abu Ghraib and Abydos. Now, this is, you know, Abu Ghraib, you've got the Sun Temple. And if you just bring up this image for me here, Ben, this is a very special location. This, you know, particular location is steeped in intrigue. It's about 15 kilometers or 8.5 miles south of Cairo. And some researchers, there are people like William Henry, they claim that this particular location, according to ancient Kemetic oral tradition, actually predates the 5th dynasty, suggesting that there was an older culture that was here before the Egyptians that understood the importance of the ceremonial aspects of this particular location. Mm-hmm. And it was purported that this place is where the pharaoh could communicate with the gods themselves. But this is setting up the scene for what's going on here, right? And of course, there's been reports of people saying that, yeah, they've experienced strange things. Even in modern times, seen lights floating around this particular location and not entirely sure what they are. And we hear this in other reports as well of people witnessing these sorts of things. But this one particular location apparently has a platform made of alablaster, which is this Egyptian crystal, which is said to react in sympathy with the vibrations of the earth.
Is that what's on the screen?
No, I don't know if that's the exact...
This is just a shot.
It's just a shot, right, of this particular location. But I did bring it up just to show you how now this site is completely run down. But, you know, it's important to note that this kind of sets the scene of, like, the American Indians. Like, they have legends of communicating with otherworldly entities through formless thought beings that are able to travel through the earth through the frequencies and the energies. So it's like, yeah, maybe that's what's occurring in this particular location. Are they, you know, tapping into something? But maybe there's something else going on here. And like, bring up the second one.
What's the mystery of this giant bowl with the holes in it?
That's hotly debated, right? There was some discussion, and there's multitudes of these. If you look at some of these images, you find that there's like a row of these particular, like what appear to be bowls lined up that have some type of...
Some kind of interdimensional glory hole.
Yeah, but no, well, I wouldn't call it that. I wouldn't call
maybe
it
a
that,
giant bowl of slop.
Maybe.
And when it gets too full, it distributes to the masses through the holes.
I don't necessarily know if it's that, right? But it's what is that guy doing? He's just sitting in one of these bowls.
Sticking his finger in it.
That's rather unfortunate.
Disgusting. No, but this is the image you're talking about, this temple?
No, this is the other temple. This is Abydos, right? So this is Seti the first, Seti I, which is known as. And of course, Dorothy Eddy, you know, we've described, you know, some of her adventures through this particular location. But this is another one of these special locations that seem to have an importance of allowing people of being able to connect with otherworldly entities. And they do it because these particular locations it's not the temple that's been built to facilitate it. It was already a location which has special attributes to it, and they built the temple around it to be able to enhance that or somehow concentrate that energy so they could communicate with things. This then starts tying into more crazy kind of ideas, and I'll go into that in a moment, but like, you know, you may have heard the whole idea of the Sumerian Stargate, and there's, you know, rumors out there that apparently there was some Stargate which had been taken. It actually fits with the movie, right? That some Stargate was found by, a bunch of researchers and explorers, and it's been taken into Iraq, and it was hidden in the green zone.
Here it is in this real image.
It's definitely real.
which is a guy sitting inside an obviously photoshopped Stargate.
But funnily enough, with those sorts of stories, right, it does tie into what appears to be in many of these cases at these locations where people have weird experiences and end up in weird locations and report it anecdotally. And this is all throughout history. It seems like the military is particularly interested in some of these locations. Like, the military shows up in many of these reports over and over again doing odd things. Like, in some of these locations, like, that are said to have these special abilities, there's been reports of the military showing up because they were exploring it as being some type of weapon storage facility, and because it was a sacred site, that would prevent the enemy or, you know, other governments from ever believing that they would put weapons there. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, the rumors are is that they're going there on purpose because they know that there's something vitally important there to allow them to communicate with the other world. And indeed, you know, Michael Schrat, of course, the aerospace historian, he claimed in 2003 that the United States military was not only aware of these naturally occurring stargates or portals that exist under these particular locations, and most importantly, Abydos, right? This one particular location that we're showing you right now, or that was up on the screen just before. But also, they utilized it in order to send an extraterrestrial entity back to its own realm of existence. Show's done. I'm out. That's it. See ya.
Denk an den 31. Juli.
Wieso?
Last Call für deine Steuer.
Oh no, ich weiß gar nicht, wo ich anfangen soll.
Weil wieso Steuer? Das ist wie Steuererklärung, nur ohne Stress.
Ist das einfach?
Klar, macht fast alles automatisch.
Dauert das lange?
Nö, einfach per App.
Na dann.
Hol dir jetzt dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer. Bis zum 31. Juli abgeben.
No,
any elaboration on this story you've dropped on?
Look, I'll link to a video of Michael Schratt describing some of these cases. And he is a really good researcher, but I really dug deep on this and I couldn't find any more details. It was just an off-the-cuff kind of remark. You've got people like Ben Rich, who was the one-time Lockheed Skunk Works detector, kind of offering things up like, I think the quote was, "We now have the technology to send ET home." So is that what Michael Schratt was referring to, and the technology is one of these locations?
I found a picture here of the Australian infantry in a secret project in World War II. They're about to send a kangaroo through the Egyptian
portal.
And
you know what? It was, if it is a temporal and spatial vortex of some kind, that explains why you've got kangaroo reports in Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly. You send them through the charged up Jacob's ladder, and they come out in Missouri or something.
Not so sure about that. Yeah, so of course, you know, I mentioned there before, I'm just looking at my notes here, the Sumerian Stargate. You know, there's a bunch of people that have made some really outlandish claims that, yes, that the Iraqi Stargate was discovered in the 1920s and it was said to have sent shockwaves around the world. And as the 1930s progressed and obviously wars started, you know, taking place, apparently the British and aligned with, at one point, with other factions, tried to go in to recover this particular Stargate, but were unable to do so. And this is why there's been ongoing battle in the background, which then led to the Gulf War. And some of this ties in with Dan Bursch and his stories. And with Dan, I think it was on maybe like an old Project Camelot, but he's obviously been in a lot of locations. I think Bill Hamilton has also reported on him. But he made some pretty outlandish claims that when they retrieved some of this technology that was linked to the Iraqi Stargate, they were capable of developing some type of chronovisor. Like, you know, the but essentially it didn't allow people to travel through a portal of some kind, but they could view, and I've got it here in my notes, they could view different time streams. And that then goes back. Yeah, well. Well, good question. Is it real? Like, is this what's happening? But look, this might give us some understanding as to why there has been this military cover-up of this kind of stuff. Because obviously, it comes down to the idea that this is very important technology to get hold of. Because if you're able to see into different time streams and different locations, you'll be able to basically spur the course of time. You'll be able to not only send people into the future or into the past to make changes, you also will be able to work out what's going to happen and play it for your own benefit. So there's a lot of these stories, like, if you go back to, and of course, this is where channeling comes in, and another thing that you have to take with a grain of salt.
Did you come across any stories of some kind of hidden Stargate in Ukraine?
Yes.
Because are you kidding? Because every time there's some kind of international conflict, some theater of war is a cover-up for the time travel technology they're actually fighting over.
Okay. I'm glad you asked it, right? I got my other set of notes, okay? So in my other set of notes, apparently there's a report from 2011. It was reported by Ukrainian journalist Sergei Ivanovich. He was speaking to a woman who had collected a series of stories from this particular location. Apparently, while there's no reports of there being an actual device of some kind, like a Stargate or something like that, apparently Ukraine, this hotly disputed location right now, is a location where there is recurrences of temporal fogs. And it's also known as the secrets of time. Like, apparently this is what's reported locally. And people realize that you can walk into these locations and experience some type of distortion in time. Now, the journalist was questioning Sergei and asking, so what's happening? And he's like, well, I got into one of these mysterious situations once. It happened in 1999. And he claims that he was sitting on an electrical train and he was looking out the window. And as they passed this particular station that he knew well, he said the fog outside began to thicken. It got thicker and thicker and thicker. And he said it was about 7 minutes because he noticed just how odd it was. But he said this fog started to kind of permeate through the train. And as he looked outside, he knew this particular town quite well. But he said the town changed and it looked like it did around 30 years ago. He said today there's a factory there, but the factory was gone. There were all these old houses that kind of were run down with their straw roofs and slate roofs. And it was just...
So it's your classic time slip
story. It's definitely a time slip, right? But he was like, my aunt actually lived there in 1944 and I actually visited there in 1948 and it looked exactly like that. It was like there was this huge amount of time that had passed from this fog. And he reported that he started feeling this strange melancholy. It was this attack. And he said he looked around and everyone was kind of in a stupor of some kind and they were kind of out of it. And as this fog penetrated through, he said you could stretch out your hand and you wouldn't be able to see the palm of your hand because that's how much that this fog was coming through and penetrating. And he said he started to feel sleepy. He thought, I'll just take a little nap. And when he awoke, the fog had kind of disappeared. And everyone was apparently getting off the train and there were all these reporters that were waiting outside the train. And he's like, what's going on? And the reason why all the reporters were there is because where have you been for 4 days? Like apparently the train had just disappeared for 4 days. Now, any validation to this story? No. Like there's nothing that I've searched for, at least in English speaking, that could find any reports of this.
Reminds me of that Ukrainian guy, Sam Hydova. Did you hear about him?
No.
Yeah. So this guy, he fell into a time slip and he managed to go back to ancient Rome.
What?
Where he took a photo of himself as an ancient Roman.
Okay, that's... Yeah, all right. So that's terrible. That is true. I'm glad that if you're listening to this, you can't see how ridiculous that is.
It's a Sam Hyde joke for those listening to the audio.
Yeah, you didn't miss anything.
Classic
on that
Sam
one.
Hyde joke.
But then, of course, there's another report that comes from this same particular region. There was a man who was walking down the street and suddenly he was enveloped by darkness and then... It thickens and then parts. And when it parts, he finds himself, you know, like 15 or 20 minutes down the road with no idea of how he'd, like a very small time slip, but enough that it had somehow not only temporally put him somewhere, but also spatially moved him as well. And so this is consistent with a case from Vera Stepanova. Now, she apparently was out mushroom picking in the forest one day, and she'd been out with a bunch of other pickers. And as she's wandering through, she started lagging behind the rest of this group. And as she lagged behind, she said something very strange happened. She said that they rushed off for the train, leaving her behind. And then this dark, then light, then dark, then light kind of effect took place. It was kind of like flashing over the top of her. It wasn't entirely a flash, but it was like this change, rapid change in lighting that took place. And she's like, that's weird. And she thought maybe there was something wrong with the vision. She wasn't entirely understanding what was happening. And she thought maybe it was the sun, but it wasn't. And she kind of dismissed the thought and wandered out to the station. And when she got to the train station, her husband was standing there waiting for her. And he's very distressed. And she's like, what's wrong? What's happening? He's like, you've been missing for 5 days. It was like this weird kind of, from the same thing over and over again. Now,
but she didn't really see anything. She just noticed the change in the weather. It's interesting that flashing of the sky, the instant darkening of the sky, or the instant... you know, coverage of clouds.
Yeah.
You hear that in the fairy folklore. We heard a couple of stories like that in Simon Parkes's recent compilations of modern so-called fairy encounters.
Yeah.
But also there's some missing 411 cases.
Yeah.
Where people who have come back have said all of a sudden the weather changed, you know, the sky looked different. There was just something completely off and it happened in an instant.
I'm firmly convinced that, you know, from these particular reports that it may have something to do with the missing 411 phenomenon. Like, I think that people might be being propelled into other locations. But in saying that, there's this idea amongst some of the researchers that look into these stories. And this is both, you know, somewhat what Paul Stonehill's reported. I'll get into this story in a moment. But there's from other researchers as well, that for whatever reason, the matter kind of has a signature to it. So you as being Benjamin Grundy, your matter has to stay in this reality.
Mm.
And sometimes if you were to walk through, and this is why it happens so commonly, people that encounter these sorts of things, these time slips or these dimensional changes or whatever, even though some of them have fantastic stories, not many, but some of them, they always come back to the same space. They always, because it's almost like there's this mechanism which causes, hang on a second, that matter that is Benjamin Grundy is not supposed to be in that time stream. It has to be back in this one. And so a really great example comes from around 300 years ago or so, where there was, and this was reported by Paul Stonehill, but I've seen it from other sources in the past as well. Paul Stonehill goes into greater detail about it, but the crux of it essentially is that there was a captain that was you know, going along in his ship. I don't exactly know where it is, but it's somewhere in the Nordic region. And as he's going along, they see something spectacular, like a rainbow of some kind, you know, up on this hill from the shore. And for whatever reason, they're all taken by it. Like, it's just so amazing seeing this effect taking place. So they go and they dock their ship, and then they start, these sailors start excitedly climbing up this hill. And as they climb up this hill and pass into this shimmering rainbow color kind of thing that's going on, apparently the other people on board the ship hear screams of these men, and then they're gone. They don't come back, and they wait and they wait and they wait. And this happened two or three times, and they don't come back until finally this one sailor, you know, gets the kind of strength to go up there. But he ties a rope around his waist and he goes through. Now, he goes through into this place, and he's screaming with excitement. It's not fear. It's like this excitement that's taking place. And they pull him back because he disappears. Like, he just disappears from space time. And when they pull him back, unfortunately, he's dead, right? But as he's come back, it's like, the effect of this space, it's like the energy of it overwhelms the system, right? It's like you're not supposed to be in that space. And I thought
maybe his head and his body became desynced.
Well, that was what was, yes, described in that particular
We spoke about this on the Last Plus show. There was Russian research done in the late 90s, state-funded, according to the sources, where one of the researchers, whose name totally escapes me, he built a Russian time machine, which had the incredible ability to slow time down by 4 minutes over an hour.
Yeah, well, great.
But fantastic. The problem was it only affected your head. So your head became desynced from your body. And in the animal experiments, all the animals died.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and as absurd as that sounds, though, I've got a story for you in a moment, which, again, there's no way to validate any of this kind of stuff. But it does suggest we do know that, yeah, the Russians and the Allies were doing a whole heap of research into this kind of stuff, all this psi phenomena, all this paranormal kind of stuff. There have been, you know, militaries all around the world that have been looking at this stuff, and I'm sure they're looking at it even today, you know, trying, because it will give you an advantage. But, you know, putting militaries aside and governments aside, apparently, once again, going back to people that live in these locations, it's like in the Siberian taiga, like the Siberian, you know, wilderness. There are hunters there that already know about the warnings of the fog, the silence of the fog. And it's like they have dogs. And if your dog runs away and it runs into a fog bank and stops barking, they know to get the hell out of there and that they'll never see the dog again. And it's just rarely accepted. It's like, yeah, you'll be carried away by this. Like, there's nothing you can do. It's an anomaly that occurs all the time.
It's like Jenny's time storms.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's because this particular location has some type of, you know, presence to it. But the matter always, and this is what these locals say, is that the matter belongs in its own space and it will always return there. So I'm like, okay, that's intriguing. And of course, what happens? These people, their dogs come back and they don't see their dogs for days and days and days. And sometimes the dogs come back and they're okay. Other times, sadly, their dogs come back and they've passed away, but don't seem to have any type of injury to indicate as to, you know, why they've
passed
away.
Again, their head got desynced from their body.
Maybe. I mean, maybe that's one possibility that's going on there. Let me just bring up, actually, let's skip forward in my notes here, because I wanted to describe actually the story of, I think it was Professor Chu. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's not Chu. It's not Professor Chu. He was another man. This is Professor Oguantan, right? So Oguantan apparently was a prominent person in the midst of Chinese history. He was believed to have lived between 850 and 933. And he was this famous Taoist, right? And apparently he failed in his studies. But when he failed in his studies, it put him onto a new path. And when he went on this new path, he went off and essentially became the Chinese John Keel back in these times. And he would report these strange, you know, reports. And in some of these reports, you had people that would seemingly have these temporal or spatial disappearances. Like they would disappear and go. And it seems like for whatever reason, this has stuck with the Chinese for quite a while, because even in more modern times, particularly during the Cold War, there are reports where this inspired the Chinese to look into the utilization of this kind of stuff for military purposes. So we come back to a Russian scientist by the name of Valentin Potolomychov, right? Mychov? Anyway.
Sounds like a hamburger you find in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, it really does.
Give me a Mychov. Give me two Mychovs.
Give me a temporal Mychov.
Yeah.
So this guy talks about Commander Chi. So Commander Chi was a member of the Chinese Communist Party. He enjoyed unheard of privileges because he was connected with the scientific research into dematerialization and the movement through space-time. And it just so happens that his real name was Zhang Bosheng. And Zhang Bosheng, Bosheng, worked in the United States for a period of time. Not suggesting that he was a spy, but there's something very spy-esque going on about this. Because what this guy was, he was China's answer to Yuri Geller, essentially. He would do things like go out and do these public demonstrations of where he would bend spoons and perform these strange, what appeared to be telepathic feats and that kind of stuff, to the point where apparently he was going to do a presentation at Beijing University. But then the government caught on to what was going on with this guy, and they got a bunch of 19 scientists in and started running experiments with him to see what he could do. And this guy would teleport tablets across, you know, the room and was doing strange things.
He's mentioned in the CIA documents.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Well, the reason why he's mentioned in CIA documents is because apparently in the experiments that they conducted, particularly in regards to teleportation, and these were experiments that were conducted from December of 1982 to May of 1993, he would dematerialize objects with timers attached to them. And then they would reappear across the room. And when examined, they found things like the difference would actually be 1 to 53 minutes. He could move things, you know, vast distances. Sometimes one item would come back slightly lighter. It's like it would change the mass. And it was believed that he was somehow altering hyperspace or space-time around these objects. And of course, this would be very important to be able to possess these types of abilities, right? In one particular experience that or experiment that they undertook, they set a clock and the clock came back 7.5 minutes behind what the actual time was. So it seems like it was being moved through space-time. But this ties into some possibility that they attempted to do this with living beings. The ultimate goal of this was not to transport clocks, obviously. It was to transport living beings. So he started doing it with fruit flies. And these fruit flies would disappear from anywhere between 11 to 73 minutes, but would return and they'd be alive.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, just reading a little bit while you're describing that, because the Zhongnan Hai, which is like the central committee of the Communist Party, they ended up being convinced at his powers to the point where one of the generals invited him to Zhongnan Hai to treat his sick daughter.
Really? That shows, you know, a definite belief, because normally they wouldn't do something like that. It comes down to the fact also that this actually was reported in a journal called Psi Research, and it was Volume 2, Number 1, published in 1983. So this was an actual scientific report that reported on the experiences that he had undergone, the Psi phenomenon that was taking place. But this ties in with, obviously, you know, the military leadership in China being greatly interested by what was happening here. And apparently, he was carrying out top secret work on the teleportation of objects of particular importance, right? That's the translation for it. And the reason why that is because there is like this report that maybe he was following on from previous research. And we found out that apparently the Chinese, as we know, were working on these sorts of programs with the Soviets and the Russians for quite a while as well. Maybe even today they're still doing the same. But there was an article published in the 1970s called The Hand of Moscow. And according to this report, a group of senior officers had gathered at a secret facility in the United States. One of them opened a safe that was full of top secret documents. Now, the documents, a folder, was placed with papers on the table. As soon as it was placed on the table, a hand appeared out of thin air, grabbed hold of the folder, and then pulled it back into space-time.
That's great.
Now, the generals watching this immediately saw it and called it the Hand of Moscow, demanding funds from the government so that they could continue their parapsychological research. Because it was that this is some type of espionage that was being utilized through this understanding of teleportation.
There was just a little anecdote I read that Bao Sheng could smell the contents of letters.
Really?
Yeah. So there was a letter that was passed to, I think it was like the story was a journalist that was about to interview him. And this, it got passed to the journalist and Bao Sheng sitting there and he's just like, and he's like, Mao's dead. And that was what the letter was. It was informing the journalist that Mao was dead.
Isn't that weird? And that's quite common with this sort of stuff, though. It's like people that have one kind of ability, but also seemingly are able to demonstrate other, you know, psi abilities as well.
Yeah, it just shows that when you're talking about psychic powers, they're not necessarily associated with the organ that's responsible for that ability. Like, people can see with their hands instead of their eyes, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's definitely something else which is occurring here. And I think that this is what's happening. Some people I was reading about, you know, there's a suggestion that we all have this innate ability to be able to move through these things depending on, you know, what environment and what state we're in. But it's obviously atrophied now. But this is why some people, you know, they go for a hike and they're more relaxed and they just happen to be in this state that allows them to pass through these spaces and these realms. And unfortunately, because we don't recognize it, people don't know what to do, you know, how to handle it. But then, right, listen to this. This story is nuts because talk about it being completely involuntary, right? Yeah, you've got militaries that are trying to focus on this stuff and harness it and utilize it. Most of these reports are completely involuntary and are downright bizarre. So this is a report from South Africa from October of 2017. And it relates to a 61-year-old man who was admitted to a hospital for emergency abdominal surgery. He was then transferred to a larger hospital in Cape Town, so that he could recover and rehabilitate. Now, apparently during his stay, a nurse was caring for him and then she just went to go and fetch something. I don't know if it was water or something to eat, but she was gone for a minute, like if that. When she came back, the man was nowhere to be seen. Now, she was insistent that there was no way that he was able to move. Like he was completely immobilized. He was suffering from this post-operative condition that would, you know, not allow him to move. There was no way that he could have just gotten up out of the bed, unplugged all these machines and wandered out. The patient had just disappeared into thin air.
Wait, was he ever found?
Yeah, he was found in the roof.
What are you talking about? Okay. In the roof?
So over the next few hours, a search was launched at the hospital, searching every inch of the facility and the surrounding area, but there was absolutely no trace of the vanished man. It would not be until 13 days later where the vanished gentleman would be found dead. But what is truly strange is where he was ultimately found. It says that the body was allegedly discovered stuffed up into a confined and inaccessible niche within the ceiling slabs of the isolated hospital unit. Neither authorities nor hospital staff had any idea whatsoever as to how this immobile old man recovering from surgery was able to get into the roof.
Did he piss off the mob or something?
Did they
sneak in and then stuff him up in the roof?
But why would you do that? Like, why would you stuff someone up into the, and why would
it's
you
It's a very difficult situation.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's a very difficult stuffing someone into the roof in that circumstance as well. And you know, you think you would have heard something. Like, it was a minute. It was a minute that she was gone and this guy disappeared. This is consistent with these sorts of stories, these mystical stories of people just suddenly vanishing, suddenly disappearing.
There was this Africana guy that was seen like right at the moment before she left his hospital room.
Maybe, right? Maybe. But there's a lot of these reports.
Paulie from Sopranos for our audio listeners.
But this is
kind of a visual gag.
This is, you know, the thing about this, though. This is a relatively recent report, right? We're only talking the last 6 years or so. When there's long, you know, stories of this, like a lot of these stories have been around for quite a long time. Now, just bring up some of these images, Ben, before I get into some of the more, you know, crazy stories. So here we've got, what was this one? Oh, this was this alleged Sumerian gate, right? This image has come up here. We know this one very well. This is in
the Andes.
Yeah, no, this was, is it the Andes? This is Peru. This is Aruma Meru. And this is the Gate of the Gods. Is that what it's titled there? Yeah, it is. The Gate of the Gods. And if you recall with this particular story, this fits in with, again, these traditional beliefs and legends, right? Of apparently, and this kind of fits in with Japanese and Eastern philosophies as well. If you come to these realms to interact with these entities, the mountains are normally for ascension. So the mountains will ascend you to certain locations. But if you come to waterfalls and wells and those sorts of things, they're locations of descension. So you'll be plunged into the bowels of the earth. And all these folkloric tales describe these sorts of experiences where people find themselves tumbling down into hellish-like scenarios, whereas when they come to the mountains, they find themselves being almost propelled up into these heavenly-like scenarios. And that image that we just put up there with the Gate of the Sun, if you look, there's this very large gate. When I say gate, it's the side of the mountain has been cut out. And I believe that's around 7 meters tall. But in the middle of it, there's also this very small gate as well. And the legends of this particular location is that at certain times, the gods, which were gigantic, would travel through this particular gate, this 7-foot tall gate. But then people, mortals, which are obviously much smaller, would be able to pass through this much smaller gate where this image you put on the screen now, Ben, demonstrates.
Yeah, that gives you a sense of the scale. So this guy sitting down, he looks about 6 feet tall.
It's absolutely enormous. Then you've got the Gate of the Sun in Bolivia. And if you just bring up this image, this I find to be intriguing because there seems to be that when many of these reports, right, remember how it was involuntary and it's random. It's like these ancient cultures, and I'm not going, well, because they're ancient, they must have automatically known, but there must be something to it, a belief system where these particular gates would be constructed to facilitate the traveling of people to be able to go through. And this one particular gate in Bolivia has a lot of stories attached to it, even modern stories of people seeing, and once again, looking through this and on occasion seeing like stormy weather on the other side, or it's storming on this side and then they look through it and it's clear. And this has come from cases in, you know, Sedona. But this particular gate, if you look at this image, and it's not very big, but if you look in the top right-hand corner, there's this large crack through it. People that carry the stories of this particular gate claim that that crack is what stopped the gate from completely functioning the way it should. So it will randomly function, but it doesn't function very well.
So it's a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, and who
knows? You either walk through and join your tour group, or you walk through and never come
back.
Yeah,
and who knows where you're going to end up, right? So then it brings us to stories of places like Stonehenge, right? And Stonehenge has already a lot of, you know, rumors and, I suppose, you know, sensationalized stories that are attached to it. But there are a couple that stand out that I want to mention. You know, again, you know, some of these examples, one comes from August the 18th of 1971. It was around 2 a.m. And it was a story of five campers that were from America. And this is a time where you could actually go and camp like right in the middle of Stonehenge.
Yeah, you can't get near it now.
You can't get near it. And you know why you can't get near it now? Is because according to this report, this is why you can't get near it now.
Oh, because of these guys.
So what these guys did, and I think maybe part of the story could be true, and it's kind of been changed over the years because allegedly many years later, some documents were found, and it's like the documents had somehow traveled through time, but you'll understand why in a moment. According to this report, there were farmers and the people that were in the vicinity of this, of Stonehenge. And on this particular evening in the early 1970s, there was a lightning storm that took place, this coming down again to do with weather. And the farmers said that they saw lightning striking the stone structure. And apparently the pillars were glowing this iridescent blue, like actually glowing every time, almost like it was storing energy somehow, suggesting that it was acting as a capacitor perhaps. And the next thing they heard was screaming, like this horrified screaming, and then it abruptly ceased. It was done.
Screaming.
Screaming. So when they go and have a look, these farmers obviously rush over to inspect the site to see what's going on. Why were people screaming? What happened? Everything was gone, except there were smoldering tent pegs in the ground.
And just 100 dead, dirty hippies.
No, everyone's gone. Everyone's gone, right? With the suggestion being, the reason why it was some type of teleportation or a temporal, you know, like gateway opening or something like that, is because apparently years later, documents appeared, which was a journal, and the journal was of the campers that had been at that site. Now, I know it's very much passport out of, you know, 9/11.
Passport falling out of the planes that hit the Twin Towers.
And it's like, so again, like all of this stuff, it really is, you have to be very... But then you've got people like Nick Redfern, you know, who's been researching Stonehenge and the anecdotal stories that have come to that location for a long time. And there are reports of where, like, if you recall, that woman that was walking her dog. And as she's walking her dog, some weird orb just suddenly appeared out
came
of stone.
Out of
it
the stone,
came
right?
Out of the stone and appeared before her. She's like, what the hell is this? And it dropped to the ground and turned into some weird worm, some weird white writhing worm with these bright eyes that terrified the hell out of her. And she got the hell out of there.
Paul Devereaux's got some great stories of the light activity seen around the standing stones all over the northern part of the world too.
Yes. Yeah, he does. And, you know,
bizarre pillars of light and strange repelling forces and all sorts of things.
I don't have it here. I can't recall it, but I think it was also Nick Redfern that reported on a bunch of... It must have been Nick Redfern who reported on anecdotal stories of soldiers that apparently were deployed to Stonehenge. And they were conducting some type of exercise. And in this exercise, it's been suggested that... And I recall that it was because the military already knew... from like the stories I just told before about the strange portal-like properties of this location. And so they were trying to access it. And so they sent, and we know that obviously the government has no troubles at all, you know, experimenting on their military forces or their civilian public without, you know, any qualms whatsoever. But apparently a bunch of soldiers were deployed to this location when there was some strange weather activity taking place. The whole area was cordoned off for a military operation. And these soldiers claim that from the Stonehenge itself, the structure itself, again came these orbs, but these were blue floating kind of orbs. And when they encountered them, each and every one of them had some type of like their own unique experience. Some said that they saw human faces inside them. Other people said that they saw through time, you know, and had other experiences. And some of them went stark raving mad, apparently, and were traumatized from heading into this particular location. So I don't know what to make of that sort of stuff, but it's fascinating that this location has a long history of strange phenomena associated with it. So maybe there is, you know, something to it. But then you have things like the American Stonehenge. So if you bring up this image for me, Ben, this is in Lake Michigan. This was discovered in 2007. I know it's a very grainy image of this. But this is a stone structure that apparently is 40 feet below the surface of Lake Michigan. It's been dubbed by some as the American Stonehenge because they've suggested it's around 9,000 years old. I don't know how they got to that, but that apparently would make it older than Stonehenge itself. It was discovered by a professor of underwater archaeology at Northwestern Michigan University. His name is Mark Holley. But the exact location about it has not been, you know, described because I don't want people hanging around this particular site. But there's a lot of strange activity associated with this because this is near what is known as the Michigan Triangle, where multitudes of people have mysteriously disappeared. Going all the way back to 1891, for example, there was a schooner by the name of Thomas Hearn. It just simply disappeared without a trace in this vicinity, taking with it its 7 crew members. Then 30 years later in 1921, the Rosa Belle was discovered floating in the water with 11 of its crew simply missing. Nothing was ever found. It's like, what is happening?
Yeah, how many shows have we done on that triangle over the years?
I know. And so then there was this other report that comes out from half a decade later in 1937, when Captain Donner was aboard a vessel known as the O.M. McFarlane. Other people had seen him go into his cabin, right? There was nothing wrong with him. He'd gone into his cabin. There was nothing strange about his behavior. 3 hours later, a crew member went to wake him up and received no reply. He realized that the door was locked, and because the door was locked, he decided to break in because he wasn't responding. When he broke in, the room was completely empty. He was shocked, and he said, what's more, the windows were all locked shut. It was just simply that Captain Donner had disappeared. Now, look, maybe people do strange things, but normally they have some type of reason. Like, you can tell that there's something going on. Nothing. And this is right in a location where people seemingly just randomly disappear.
That Dr. Mark Holley you mentioned, there's an image of him there on the screen. He's showing one of the stones, one of the large boulders that's near that so-called underwater Stonehenge.
What is that depiction?
Mastodon.
Oh, Mastodon.
Yeah, he claims there's a Mastodon carving on the stone.
Maybe that's...
And there's not just a circle of stones. He claims he's located stones that are going for over a mile, like lined up for over a mile under Lake Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, see, this starts tying in with this kind of stuff, that there is something about these locations that, you know, allow people to pass in and out of our reality. And this is what it comes back to the folk tales and oral traditions, is that people previously had been interacting with gods, entities, who knows what, through these spaces.
So this article at Archeon News says there's a Dr. John O'Shea from the University of Michigan who's found a similar structure underneath Lake Huron.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. That's a topic for another day, I think.
Yeah, well, we'll go into that another time. And I just wanted to mention this story to you before we just move on. There's Develi's Cave, which is in Greece. It's also known as Penteli. There's a couple of books that have been written on this. It's a well-known. In fact, Marcus Loth has a great write-up on this particular location. And apparently, this is one of those locations where it was, even though there's something sacred about it, it was covered up by the military. The military kind of closed everything off. And if you bring up the image of it here, Ben, apparently, it was said because the military was trying to hide nuclear weapons in there, but all of a sudden, like, which just sounds absurd.
That's the most convenient place to put your giant missiles, is in that very hard-to-reach cave.
And then the military apparently just disappeared, and when the military, you know, disappeared, people went in there, and they found that they'd been digging tunnels that abruptly stopped, almost like they were looking for something, and then they found what they needed. And of course, the reason why this cave has got such mystery attached to it is because there's anecdotal reports of people wandering into it and just never appearing again, but they never find any trace of them whatsoever. So that just so happens that there's this story, right? Let me just bring up the exact details. This comes from, it must have been somewhere in the late 1970s, apparently 1977, maybe a little bit later, but it was an account that featured a husband and a wife who happened to be hiking in the area. When they didn't know that they were near this cave. They just happened to stumble upon the cave's entrance. But what captured their attention was the presence of this mysterious car that appeared to be parked above the cave's entrance on a ledge. Now, I don't know in that image you showed before, Ben, if it was just up to the side there or where it was. The most important thing to note about this, it's not really relevant as to where it was how it got up there. Because from where they were, There is no way that this car could have gotten up onto this ledge. Like, it was just weird. There was no explanation. As bizarre as it sounds.
What kind of car was it? Like a beat up old VW?
No, so they went up there, right? So out of curiosity, they actually went up, they hiked up to this particular location where the car was, just above the cave's entrance. And they said that the car was brand new. Like brand like new.
Fresh out of the showroom.
It says here, they ventured up to the ledge and approached the car. They could immediately see that the vehicle was brand new in pristine condition, almost as it had been placed straight there off the factory production line. Literally every part of the vehicle appeared to be brand new, even the tires, as if it had never been even test driven. So what is a car doing up there, right?
Did they trace the ownership?
None of that, because it's just a husband and wife that are going for a...
No, but I mean, afterwards, is there any conclusion to the story?
No, they got the hell out of there. You know why they got the hell out of there? Because apparently, as the gentleman walked towards the car to take a closer look, he hears his wife let out a piercing scream. He'd spun around to face her and turned his attention to where she was looking. And apparently, he saw some like bushes move, but he didn't see anything else. But his wife was hysterical. So he comes running down and he comforts her and he says, "What's wrong?" And she's like, the thing is there. And he's like, "What?" And finally, when she was completely calmed down, she insisted that there had been a strange and menacing oval-shaped creature with a pair of large red glowing eyes, much like the worm that was described in Stonehenge, right? And he's like, "Surely not." But then she's like, he saw the bushes move, right? She said that this thing had rushed her out of the bushes before retreating back and disappearing. Now,
did the Mothman just go boop, boop and jump in the car and fly away?
I'm off. No, no. But look, it says here, incidentally, several days later, the husband found himself in the middle of another unsettling encounter. He claimed that while he was near the cave, he witnessed a black, disc-shaped object that hovered overhead. Strangely, as soon as he set eyes on the strange craft, he was filled with a sudden feeling of absolute dread. And then when the object disappeared from sight, the feeling of dread immediately left as well. And some have suggested that this lapse in security was actually to encourage attention seekers and adventure seekers to go to this location because of the weirdness of it, to see how they'd react and what they'd do.
It's a cool story. Can we suggest that the car wasn't a car at all? It was just some kind of illusion? It was actually...
Maybe.
A craft of unearthly nature?
Maybe. I mean, that you're probably right here. And we hear this from a lot of reports, UFO reports, of where UFO-type craft do somehow mask themselves or change shape. You know, they look like aircraft, sometimes cars from a distance. And when people get closer, they realize that it's something else. But... Now, the fact that the military had been there previously and from these other locations around the world where military activities have been attached to this, is it possible that they were running some type of experiment, whether it's mind control or who knows? Who knows what's happening with this kind of place? It's just all very, very strange. But then, of course, you've got Sedona as well, where Sedona is a great example where you know the story of the...
Tom Dongo, let's
go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you've got the story of the treasure hunters. So you've got, and I won't go over it in too great a detail because it's a really well-known story, but in 1956, there was Rob and Chuck Quinn. They ventured into the Rocky Desert. They were looking for gold and lost treasure, and they came across this stone archway. And the stone archway was roughly 7 feet high, 5 feet wide, and had columns around it. And what they noticed was that... not only did it have a weird foreboding feeling about it, there was one particular time where they said that they could look through it and it was like there was a storm around them and it, like the other story before, it was all clear on the other side. It was still the same valley, but it was like it was a different time. Like, how is that possible? And so they went back into town, and when they went into town, apparently was a local there sitting in a bar or something or a tavern, and he overheard them talking about what they'd found, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, you know, it's like I'm a, you know, American Indian and..." Mm. He's like, "I've got long oral traditions about this particular place." And he's like, "Yeah, like people disappear through it. It's a gateway for people to travel through. You should go up there sometime." So they go back and they throw a whole bunch of stones through it. And when they throw these stones through it, the stones actually disappear, right? They're just gone. But what's crazy about this is not them in particular, although one of them, I don't know if it was Rob, I think it might've been Rob, that he had gone back to the site himself. And when he'd traveled down into the canyon where this particular location was, he found himself seemingly teleported 250 meters. So it wasn't like he found himself on the other side of the canyon.
Is this a story I covered on the show?
Yeah, it's very similar.
But the Indians run through and one of them, they're playing around, one of them runs through and then never comes back.
Yeah, yeah, it's that particular, which is why I didn't go into it in too great a detail. But the reason why I mention it, right, is because there's a follow-up story that came through from years later. It was just an anecdote, right? But this is what's great about these sort of stories, when you can kind of match stories together. Apparently, years later, years and years later, there was a bunch of people that were hiking through. Like, it was just a coincidence that they were hiking through. Now, as they were hiking through, they suddenly got smashed with a hail of stones that came, were thrown out of the portal on the other side. There was years later. So it was like, when possibly they had been up there throwing stones through that had disappeared, they had somehow traveled through time and that they'd come out years later, which was validated by a report later on. What is this?
This just pretty much sums up Sedona, doesn't it? Some random guy playing music over a young white woman lying on a rock.
Nothingness and oneness with the land, a deep surrender to the present moment.
You can feel the jolt.
Oh, God, it's exactly what you'd expect her to say.
We shouldn't be so, you know, because there is
a deep
strangeness.
Surrender.
There is strangeness associated with these locations. But look, you know, this kind of stuff, like, it does pop up a lot. And, you know, I wanted to mention just a couple of cases for you as well, because the other thing that happens is not only strange weather, those fogs that Paul Stonehill was reporting about, you know, people from the Siberian tiger saying, yeah, if these fogs come through, you get the hell out of there. In so many of these well-known teleporting reports, you find that there's some type of weird fog or mist that's attached to it. Mm-hmm. You know, Mirabelli is one really great example. So there was a man that was already a spiritualist, and he was one day heading towards, I think he'd already been practicing in a seance. And from what I recall, there'd been weird experiences where he'd gone to a seance and they'd contacted the spirits. And when he'd contacted the spirits, like, oh, prove that, you know, you have skills or some type of abilities. And all of a sudden, whoever was talking went silent. And then they heard this, like, upstairs. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And they all in the dark kind of flounder around because it's a seance. And they finally, you know, managed to open the door and turn the lights. One of the guys that was sitting there holding hands is gone. So they all go upstairs to find what this noise is. And the guy that was sitting downstairs in a locked room, he was now in a locked room upstairs, which was locked from the outside. And he was sitting there still holding his hands out like he was in part of the seance in this kind of thing.
It's like he didn't get wedged in the ceiling panels.
Well, that's the thing, right? And there's other reports where they're vague, but there was a report from the early 1900s of this young boy in the Philippines. I shouldn't say the early 1900s. It was later than that, but he was in the Philippines. This kid just kept on dematerializing from class. Like, it just kept on disappearing. And the reason why it kept on disappearing is he said that this entity would show up and she would take him around and he would just hold her hand and he'd hold her hand and he'd just dematerialize. And he'd end up 300 miles from home and would actually have to call home or, you know, would be found by other people and bring him back because he was so well known that this kid was just randomly dematerialized.
How many times are you sitting in English class and Mrs. Lewis is rambling on about Jane Austen and you just want some entity to roll up?
That seemingly
take you on another journey into another dimension. Yes, please.
Seemingly is what happened with this kid, although it was believed that he was possessed by a demon. And I think in that particular story, from what I recall, I think a Catholic priest did get involved. He's like, yeah, it's a demon. The next time this young girl, whimsical girl showed up, it was like a horrible demon. And as soon as they exorcised this demon, he returned to just normality. But like, there's some great examples like of Bahia Blanca from 1959 of a businessman who was traveling home from Buenos Aires. He awoke in his hotel after deciding to stop the previous night. And apparently, he checked out of his hotel and he wandered off to the car. And when he wandered to the car and put his key into it, he was suddenly surrounded by this white mist. And this white mist engulfed him and engulfed the vehicle. And the next thing he knew, his surroundings were completely changed. He wasn't in front of his car. He was just standing in the middle of nowhere beside a long road. Now, he doesn't know what's going on. He's kind of in this stupor, and he waves down this truck, and he says, he's like, oh, can you take me back to my hotel? And the driver's just like, what the hell are you talking about?
The driver's like,
well, yeah, pretty much, because he's like, you're 1,000 kilometers from where you are, from where you were, like where you're describing. Where he's like, no, it's impossible. He's like, no, I'm there. And apparently they pull into a gas station, and they call up the hotel, and the hotel's like, yeah, the guy was just here. Your car's running.
His car's still going.
But he's 1,000 kilometers away.
That's hilarious.
And so going back to the story of the spiritualist who started messing in a similar fashion, right? The spiritualist who had been messing with these spirits and now all of a sudden, like, it's inviting it in. So it's not just a spontaneous thing in certain earth locations. It's almost like there's this one-way permeability where entities from the other side can actually drag you through. They don't need to take you into a particular location. Because once he'd allowed these spirits into his world, he'd gone to a train station amongst a group of his other friends, and they're all walking along to get on the train. And as he goes to step onto the train, he's enveloped in this white, thick mist and then dematerializes. He just was gone. Right. Now, of course, the station master steps out just a moment later because they're all milling about going, what the hell did we just see? The guy was calling from the next station to say, oh, by the way, I already got here. So it's like, what do we make of these stories? Like, are people inviting this in? Is it completely spontaneous? Is it a mixture of the two? Or is it more than that? Is it electromagnetic? You know, no one really knows what's happening with these cases. But what we do know is that there's lots and lots of reports of this kind of stuff. So what I'll do is I'll link to more of these reports in the show notes at mysteriousuniverse.org. There's a whole collection of these. Brent Swanser has done a great write-up on a number of these more modern cases. Mm-hmm. Again, though, as I pointed out, we have to be careful with them because it's difficult with some of them. Some of them could be, you know, creepypasta-style reports. But there are numerous accounts that seem to have validating details that suggest that something very, very strange is going on. But what to make of it, I don't really know, and I'll leave that up to you.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Time travel. I think the general nature of it is whenever you're dealing with something that's not of this physical dimension, it's independent of the time in our dimension.
Absolutely, it is.
The flow of time is intrinsically tied to our material world.
Yes.
And all the things you described are things that are not of our material world. They're of another existence.
And you know what?
So not bound by our time.
Absolutely. And it really became apparent to me when I was going back to the missing 411 cases, which is like, I wonder if, you know, in 300 years' time, we'll have these people that just show up randomly, because there's a whole heap of those reports of like people that show up from like the 1950s of where a guy appears at Tokyo Airport from, you know, carrying a passport from some land or from some country that doesn't actually exist. And it's like he's somehow materialized there. But in many of these reports as well, people, you know, and the very old reports, they disappear, right? They're just walking through a forest and disappear. They come back 300 years later. Mm. Of course, 300 years later is the 1700s, 1800s. But I'm wondering now with like the missing 411 cases, because you're right, it's on its time, it's not on our time. Are we going to have in 300 years strange reports of people just appearing?
Well, a lot of, like you said, a lot of these stories are very old. I mean, even when I was talking to Bibu last week, right at the start, he mentions there's an ancient Indian king who he lived in the Golden Age and he wanted to find a husband for his daughter. He couldn't find a husband. So he travels to this ethereal realm. He jumps in his like flying disc, travels to an ethereal realm, tries to find some suitor and they organize it, comes back home to see his daughter. Not only has like 5 days passed or a couple of years passed, he's in an entirely different yuga.
Yeah, right.
It's like 8,000 years. 8,000 years has gone.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. And you're right. And like from our perspective, it is this kind of linear, you know, time, but it's on its own time. It's completely out of our understanding.
Speaking about the shifting of time, coming up in our Plus extension, we're going to be looking at the brilliant series of articles from one of our favorite Substack authors, Popehead, at the Popehead Post. He's got this selection called Between Xanadu and Shambhala. And we're going to delve into, I just used the AI term, delve. We're going to delve. Scripted by AI, this show. Definitely. We're going to delve into the mystery surrounding this. And in particular, there's, I think I might have to split this into two parts because it's quite involved, but there's a geographical link to the spiritual center of the planet.
Oh, cool.
And this is clearly connected across cultures. I'm going to give you multiple examples of this. But also there's the concept that there was a cataclysm and this spiritual center, this pole, shifted to a new location. And it's funny because Popehead says, look, to really get to the bottom of this, you quite literally have to go beneath the surface of the earth.
Hence using the term delve. It's fair in this circumstance.
It works
in this circumstance.
So that's coming up for our Plus members. If you want to get access, head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. All the details are there. Sign up today. You get access to the big extensions we do every single Friday for these podcasts. And of course, if you're on Plus, you get access to our exclusive shows that come out every Tuesday as well. You're getting more than double the content when you sign up for Plus. Plus members also get an ad-free version of the show. And if you sign up for MU Max, you get access to our entire back catalogue going back 16, 17 years. So there's a huge amount of content there. Sign up today, mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. That's a wrap for this free edition of MU. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. For everyone else, we'll catch you next week. extension. Great to have you.